Step inside the mysterious world of the Cecil Hotel, once a beacon of luxury now shrouded in dark secrets and ghostly whispers. Join us as we unravel the haunting past, explore its eerie corridors, and uncover the chilling truth behind one of the most infamous hotels in history. Are you brave enough to uncover the secrets of the Cecil Hotel? Happiest day, beautiful soul. Welcome back to The Medium Matters, the podcast where we're all mini mystics learning about the paranormal, the supernatural, and all the things together. And everyone wants chills right up the spine. I'm your host Chantel, and today we're checking into one of the creepiest hotels in all the land and hopefully checking out. So grab your prayer beads, douse yourself in holy water, and let's get down to the good stuff. Welcome to the Cecil Hotel, once a symbol of luxury and grandeur in booming downtown Los Angeles. Built in the 1920s, this majestic hotel was envisioned as a beacon of opulence, attracting high society guests from all around the world. The 14-story, 700-room hotel boasted a stunning marble lobby, stained glass windows, alabaster statues, and a grand staircase, all destined to usher it into an incredible future. However, beneath the facade of luxury, a dark history lurks within the walls of the Cecil Hotel. Over the years, this iconic landmark has become synonymous with murder, tragedy, and paranormal activity. So what went wrong? Within 5 years of its opening, the U.S. was hit by the Great Depression, and while the Cecil continued to flourish, so to speak, into the 1940s, the time beyond brought decline as the surrounding area became home to as many as 10,000 transients and was eventually dubbed Skid Row. The Cecil Hotel's clientele slowly transitioned from business travelers, tourists, and socialites to prostitutes and other criminals. Reports of unexplained deaths, mysterious disappearances, and eerie encounters have plagued the Cecil Hotel, leading many to believe that it's haunted by restless spirits from its past or something even more sinister. The Cecil Hotel has such a sordid history that it actually served as inspiration for the fifth season of American Horror Story. And if you haven't seen it, I absolutely encourage you to do it. It's a really good season. From the infamous case of Elisa Lam to the tragic stories of its past guests, the Cecil Hotel's haunted history is a chilling reminder of the darkness that resides within its walls. Let's get into it. So one little surprise I didn't tell you about is that I have a very special guest with me today, and it is my delicious partner in crime, my lovely husband. Husband.
Yes, I'm here to enjoy the storytellings of my wife.
Of the Medium Matters.
And the Medium Matters.
How are you feeling about this episode?
I have some little background where we've watched a few videos and things, but it'll be interesting to get more detail on the stories.
So I think it's important to say that my delicious partner, I don't even know how to word this right. I would not call him a skeptic by any means, but I don't know that calling him a believer is entirely accurate either. He leans more toward believer than skeptic, but I think he has a healthy balance of both. Would you agree?
Yes, I'm in the middle.
Yeah, he's in the middle.
I'm a moderate.
Why don't you tell our beautiful friends how you feel about ghosts and hauntings, like where they're permitted to haunt?
Well, I mean, we're in relatively new construction, so there are no ghosts in our house.
Why and is that?
Nobody's lived here before. So they know, don't come here for your previous people. That's the proper way
don't
to go.
Don't come
things.
Here to haunt.
Yes. They may hang out at the cemetery and see us when we walk by. They may even be on the street, but not in the house.
Not here. So the rule is, in case you didn't know, if there is new construction, there are no hauntings.
That's true.
I feel like the cast of Poltergeist and any new neighborhood that has experienced anything similar.
That's fiction. That's fiction. This is reality.
They would disagree. All right, so let's get into our Cecil Hotel history, because there's a lot of it. Some of the hotel's guests have taken their own lives by ingesting poison, jumping from a window, or slashing their own throat. In September of 1944, 19-year-old Dorothy Jean Purcell was staying at the hotel with her 38-year-old boyfriend. One night during their stay, she awoke with severe stomach pain and quietly slipped out of bed, went into the bathroom, and to her surprise, gave birth to a baby boy. Believing the baby was dead, she threw him out the window where he landed on the roof of an adjacent building and died. Dorothy was arrested for murder, and during her trial, Three psychiatrists testified that she was mentally confused at the time of the incident, and she was later found not guilty by reason of insanity. How sad is that?
Yeah. She didn't know she was pregnant?
According to the reports, everything I saw, she had no idea. That's crazy. In January of 1947, the body of 22-year-old Elizabeth Short was found in an L.A. neighborhood. Her killer had slashed her face from the corners of her mouth to her ears, bisected her body at the waist, drained her blood, and washed her body before dumping it in a vacant lot. While Elizabeth's death is not directly tied to the Cecil, she was seen at its bar a few days before she went missing and was ultimately found murdered. And in case you didn't already figure it out, we're talking about the Black Dahlia. Yeah. Another really crazy case, super sad. Please comment and tell us if you want us to do an episode on the Black Dahlia. There's so much...
A lot goes down in L.A.
Yeah, California, a lot goes down. Yeah,
a lot goes down.
Yeah. No offense, L.A. We love you. We love you. I'm a SoCal girl. But yeah, well, you know, and to be fair, everything we're going to talk about today is in L.A. because we're talking about the Cecil. So, but the Black Dahlia case, it has been intriguing forever. From the moment I first heard about it, I thought it was just so sad and interesting. And there is also a link to an American Horror Story episode. I feel like there was at least an episode that I can remember. I think it was in the first season. I have to double check because I forgot to check on that. But I do remember a connection where it was like the home of the house that was portrayed in the season belonged to a crazed doctor from back in the day, the 40s.
That is back in the day. Back it's like day. 80 years ago.
And so there was some connection sort of kind of roundabout to Black Dahlia and similar murders. So yes, let us know if you want a Black Dahlia episode, because I am here for it. All right. In June of 1964, the body of Georgina Pigeon Goldie Osgood was found in her room by a hotel worker. Goldie had been raped, stabbed, and beaten to death, and her room had been found ransacked. Goldie had lived at the Cecil for 6 years and was well known in the area for spending time in nearby Pershing Square, where she would visit with and feed the birds every single day for hours. When they found her body, her favorite LA Dodgers cap was lying next to her, along with a bag full of bird seed. To this day, her murder remains unsolved. That's really sad. She was well-liked. She had a lot of friends in the area.
Did they have a lot of long-term residents at the Cecil Hotel?
So it was for daily, weekly, and monthly rentals. And
like an extended stay.
Right. I guess like an extended stay, yeah. And so initially it was for, you know, like business travel. And I mean, it was a beautiful place. Really pretty. So yeah, when I saw that information about her having lived there for 6 years, I was surprised. Mm-hmm. But a lot of people did stay there for extended periods of time because of work. Some of them working like right in the area, they didn't have anywhere else to stay. So they would stay there while they did their work, like contract work, I guess. And then off they went.
Okay.
So in addition to these cases, I mean, there are a lot of other stories that we haven't covered and won't cover here. But yeah, really sad stories of suicide and murder and just, you know, crazy happenings. But we're going to move into some infamous residents or guests, as they were. So we're going to start with Richard Ramirez. The look on my partner's face right now. He's a doozy. He is a doozy. So Richard Ramirez, in case you don't already know, is the Night Stalker. He was dubbed the Night Stalker after some other names made it into the newspapers. So Richard Ramirez committed a string of murders. Like his crimes actually started like back in the 70s and moved into the 80s. And there was a crime spree that he committed from 84 to 85. And it was home invasions, brutal rapes, brutal murders, burglary. I mean, the whole thing. We're not going to go into his story because
It's a good documentary on Netflix on it.
Yes. And it's an interesting story. I don't want to give him any more celebrity in this episode than he already has. Yes. He is a creepy mother effer, mm-hmm. like creepy. So yeah, we'll get back to all that stuff. So Ramirez spent time at the Cecil Hotel. So he wasn't like, you know, the Black Dahlia where he was just seen at the bar. He actually rented a room, and it was room 1419, and he rented this room during this killing spree from, you know, somewhere in the neighborhood of 84 and 85. So it is claimed that he would return to the hotel after committing some of these murders, possibly all of these murders, undress in the alley, put his clothes, bloody clothes rather, in the dumpster, and then walk through the lobby covered in blood and wearing nothing but underwear, sometimes completely naked. And no one batted an eyelash.
Like, this is normal for LA.
It's normal for the hotel.
Okay.
And maybe not even normal. Maybe people were looking at this and thinking, we don't want to tangle with the likes of this kind of evil, because what the heck is going on?
Why did I think his last name was Romero? For some
reason. I think in the documentary, they talk about it like he was known by both names. Okay. If I remember correctly, because I always call him Richard Romero.
Yeah.
So maybe I'm the dummy. I'm the one who's wrong.
That's why I think of him as Romero, because yeah. You always refer
Richard
to him.
Richard Romero, yeah. So, yeah, some say that while he was there, he was witnessed practicing Satanism and performing rituals at the hotel, and possibly even ushered in more evil than there already was, if there was evil before. So, I mean, there's no way to know. There's just no way to know. So like my delicious partner said, Netflix does have a really good documentary called Night Stalker, The Hunt for a Serial Killer, if you're interested in his story. It is a very brutal story. There is a lot of gruesome detail in there. They talked to the two main detectives who were part of that case and helped to solve it, to figure out who was behind these murders, because these killings had gone unsolved for quite some time.
You'll make sure your windows and your doors are locked, and maybe even invest in a dog.
Yeah, or more than one dog. Mm. It was very creepy and sad. I mean, he had a really sad childhood, and his upbringing just, like, it did not get any better. He had the influence of a cousin, I think it was, who he was really close to. His cousin also had some issues. He had served in the Vietnam War, I think it was. And when he came back, that is around the time that Richard started spending even more time with him, and he witnessed his cousin,
somebody was beating
in him. Any event, yeah, this person who he was very close to, he witnessed this person kill his wife, like, you know, his, not Richard's wife, he was not married, he was young at the time, but, you know, a lot of things that went down in his childhood and, you know, his younger years, and it was really sad, really, really sad. And he never escaped it, never got away from it, and really went into a life of crime. And his crimes just became more gruesome. They just, you know, things just escalated. And
so the thought is, was he as evil as he was? Then that's what drew him to the hotel. Or did the hotel draw him in because he had the capability of being as evil as he is? And it enhanced it.
So are you saying he was attracted to the...
Was he attracted to the hotel because he was evil? Or was the hotel attracted to him because he had the capability of being more evil?
I mean, who knows even? Right? Who knows? The hotel, I think, was attractive to people, obviously, in the area who... I mean, you know, there, it's nearby Skid Row. Yeah. There's already a lot of, I think, sad energy, mm-hmm. maybe desperate energy, and I think like attracts like. So maybe it's not necessarily the energy of the hotel, so to speak, but the energy of the area. I don't know. I mean, it's a good question. It's a really good question. And if we could talk to him right now, which I'd never want to, but if we could.
Didn't he die?
He did. He died in prison, yeah. He had like... I don't know, 14 or something life sentences. Yeah.
Didn't he get married?
Yeah, he did. Yeah. He did get married.
Did she also stay at the Cecil Hotel?
Jesus. Yeah, he did end up getting married while he was in prison. He passed away at like 50, early 50s, in his early 50s from cancer, which, I don't know, seems too kind for the things that he did, because he did some heinous things. So we're going to move on from him because we've spent a lot of time talking about him, but he is really super creepy, super creepy. And the fact that he did stay there, he lived there. And at the time, I believe, and I don't know if all the rooms were like this, but they had like communal bathrooms, and some of the rooms were even like communal where you had roommates and stuff. So I can't imagine you're staying somewhere where it's like hostel, like, you know, and somebody comes in like all bloody and stuff, and you just like roll over and go to sleep. Like, absolutely not.
Like, dude, do you need a towel?
I think you need a different room, sir. That's what I think you need. So I don't know. So if you want to know more about his story, and it is an interesting story, I think the cops in the area, the detectives, everyone did, you know, I think they did a great job. They did the best they could with what they had. And what ended up being his downfall was that one of the people he attacked survived the attack and reported it. She was able to give a description of his car, I think it was, and they found the car, and they got a partial, at a minimum, they got a partial fingerprint, and they were able to identify him. And when they tracked him down, I mean, it was, I'm not going to spoil it for you if you haven't seen it yet, but I suggest you see it, because that part was actually pretty gratifying, where I was like, oh, a little bit of a, what's it called, like
karma?
Yeah.
And don't run into a Hispanic neighborhood if you're trying to get away with murder.
Yeah. I mean, it's good. So if you haven't seen Night Stalker, The Hunt for a Serial Killer on Netflix, definitely check it out. So we're moving on. I said this like, I don't know, 100 minutes ago. We spent a lot of time on him. So there is another serial killer who did spend time at the Cecil Hotel, and it is Jack Unterweger. And I hope I'm pronouncing that right. So Jack was an Austrian serial killer who committed murder in several countries. Initially, he was convicted in 1974 of a single murder. And while he was in prison, he began to write extensively and gained the attention of the Austrian literary elite. Crazy. So when he gained their attention, they took it as evidence that he had actually been rehabilitated. His writing was so good. Like, it was...
But you have to be smart also to commit a lot of murders, I mean, and get away with it.
Or do you?
I mean, yeah, that's true.
I don't know.
I thought that
maybe the ones who get away with it, yeah, like, yeah, you said,
you have to have some level of intelligence, I feel like.
Maybe. Or good luck.
Yeah.
Or maybe it's not good luck. I don't know if that's what you call it. So after significant lobbying, Jack was released on parole in 1990 and became a minor celebrity, eventually working as a playwright and journalist. Right? Talk about second chances.
How many people did he kill?
Let's
before press a pause he got on released.
That. There had been several, but that one stint in 1974 was for one murder. Okay. I think that was for a single murder.
Okay.
And I don't know. I didn't look into too much of his history because, again, you know, serial killer, and we don't want to give him a lot of celebrity on the episode. But it's interesting. It's interesting in any event. So, yeah, he is eventually working as a playwright and a journalist. So in the early 90s, I believe it was in 91, he was hired by an Austrian magazine to write about crime in Los Angeles and the difference between U.S. and European attitudes toward prostitution. So as a result, he went to California, L.A. specifically. He met with local police. He participated in ride-alongs and was allegedly, you know, or supposedly doing research on the city's red light districts. So during his time in LA, three sex workers were beaten, sexually assaulted, and strangled with their bras using a signature knot Jack had used on 9 other victims. Yeah. So he stayed at the Cecil and reportedly chose the Cecil in homage to Richard Ramirez. Tell me that is not crazy. I mean, like attracts like.
Yes.
Didn't we say that a few minutes ago? Like attracts like. So we're going to jump to February of 2013, when the hotel started receiving complaints of the water having low pressure and a strange appearance and taste. On February 19th, a hotel maintenance worker discovered a body in one of the hotel's four 1,000-gallon water tanks on the roof. It was the body of Elisa Lam. Have you heard of Lisa Lam?
Just go in the elevator and then...
Yes, that was her.
I thought I saw a video.
Yeah. So Lisa was a 21-year-old Canadian college student visiting California during a solo trip in 2013. This trip was meant to be short and give her a much-needed break from her studies. And several days into her LA stay, approximately January 31st or February 1st, Elisa's parents reported her missing after she'd failed to check in with them, which she had done every single day of her travels. On February 13th, a couple of weeks into the investigation of her whereabouts, police released a video showing Elisa's last documented moments, and they were strange to say the least, which is the video that you're talking about. Mm-hmm. So in this video, Elisa can be seen speaking to someone who is either off camera or not there at all. She makes unusual movements and gestures, again to someone either off camera or not there at all. She presses all the buttons in the elevator, looks out into the hall, gets off the elevator, gets back on the elevator, and eventually gets off the elevator for good, never to be seen alive again.
Well, I mean, not visible to the camera. Like, person not there at all. It could have been there in the spiritual world.
For sure, yes. In another dimension.
Yeah.
So Lisa's death was eventually ruled an accidental drowning with bipolar disorder as a significant factor. So there are a lot of conspiracy theories about her behavior and her untimely death. And this is another one, like Black Dahlia. We can do a dedicated episode to Elisa and the things that went down, the things that have, you know, are public knowledge because we can't get anything else. But it's a sad story. She was such a young woman and she had her whole future ahead of her, just, you know, on break from college, just trying to, you know, I don't know, just have a little vacay and enjoy life a little. And then this happened. So, you know, some of the things I read about were that when she initially checked into the hotel, she was in a roommate situation where she was staying with other people and they complained that she was portraying odd behavior, and so the hotel moved her to her own room.
Was she diagnosed as bipolar prior to this?
Yes.
Okay, yeah. I was like, so, did they just decide she was bipolar after she died?
No, she was on medication. Okay. Like, this was something that her family had reported, and yeah, it was known. She also had a blog where she would openly talk about this and talk about her depression, her loneliness, and... So it was just a sad situation, really, really sad. And I mean, it didn't even happen that long ago, 2013. So
there was an episode of Castle that kind of...
Yeah, there are actually a few TV shows, but yeah. I do remember specifically an episode of Castle where
the blood
it was
coming through the...
Yeah, it was a very similar... Like, yeah. Yeah, very, very similar. And there was like video footage of this girl on an elevator and... Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
They just moved it from the West Coast to the East Coast.
Yeah. To New York. Yeah. Really sad situation. One of the theories is that she was playing a Korean game. It's like this elevator game where you press these different buttons and it takes you to a floor and you press a different button there and you do something else. And at some point, you know, if you did it right, a girl gets onto the elevator. You're not supposed to address her in any way or like acknowledge her. And eventually this is supposed to lead you to a different dimension. And you need to remember like the sequence of the numbers, like the order that you press them in so that you can get back to the right dimension. And I don't know. I really don't know.
I feel like that was also on like a rookie episode or something, which is just Castle.
But he's a
cop.
It could have been. I mean, a lot of different theories. I mean, there's also been talk about how she ended up in this water tank because it was up on the roof of the hotel. If you're going to the roof from the inside of the hotel, you know, there's like a staircase that gets there, that takes you there. But there is at least one door that is secured. It's locked. It has an alarm. You have to have like, you have to be personnel with a code or a key card or something to be able to bypass that door. The other way is through the fire escape. So you're, you know, climbing the staircase on the outside of the building, which I believe you access from a window. And so one of the things I read is that they did have dogs. The investigators brought in dogs to see if they could track her. And they were able to track her to a window, and then the scent stopped. So I can't say if they took the dogs or dog out onto the fire escape. And if they did, like, there was no scent, or they just didn't take the dog out. I really have no idea. But, you know, some of the other questions are that it's rumored that the lids on these water tanks are heavy, like anywhere between 20 and 50 pounds. She was a small woman. And so would she have been able to lift that? These tanks are also very tall. So, I mean, the tank that they found her in has a ladder on the side. There was a ladder in the pictures that I saw. So yeah, she could have climbed up there. But then to open that lid, which is not a small lid. Yeah.
Get in.
Yeah, hold it open, get in.
Fall in.
Right.
However.
And then, you know, I've seen some contradicting information saying that when they found her, the lid was closed. There's some other stuff that says when they found her, the lid was open. So if the lid was closed, how did she get it closed from the inside? It is a huge lid. We're not talking like a 10-inch lid. We're talking, this thing is very, very, I mean, it's holding water, or these tanks hold water for drinking, for showering, for all of these things. So, I mean, 1,000 gallons each, that's a lot of water. They're huge. So the other strange thing is that when they found her, she was lying face up in the water, naked. Her clothes were found, I believe, at the bottom of the tank. But that aside, the clothes had like a sand-like substance on them. So they were like, where the heck did this come from?
She went to the beach first?
I mean, I don't know. It's crazy. But they found her key card, the key to her room. They never found her phone, her cell phone. So sad situation. A lot of conspiracy theories. It's, you know, a lot of people have said, you know, just leave it alone. She had a mental illness and, you know, that's what she succumbed to. And a lot of other people think that there's something dark and sinister that happens. Maybe she was influenced by an energy or multiple energies that were there. And
I feel like if you've made it to the roof, the easier way to end your life is just off the roof.
Right. It's
like,
yeah, it's interesting, right?
You to Why climb would you go into a tank? Tank, yeah.
Right. And where's her phone?
Mm-hmm.
Like,
has it ever been found?
No, they never found it. At least not that I was able to find.
This was 2013?
2013.
So it should be able to ping locations and should have been able to.
I don't know. I mean, but I'm saying, like, what person, especially at like in your early 20s, are you going to find who doesn't have a phone? I mean, I know there are people who walk around without a phone, but we know she had one because she was calling her parents every day. So where the heck is her phone? It's crazy.
It's in the other dimension.
Yeah. She actually made it.
She made it. She forgot her phone there.
Yeah.
She thought she could get back to it.
It's sad. So I feel for her family. I feel for everyone who knew and loved her because, you know, obviously they're left behind and they have a lot of questions and it's just a sad situation. So if you do want a dedicated episode about Elisa Lam, let me know. Comment. So let's talk hauntings. There have been a lot of deaths there, and I think I saw somewhere, I mean, it's under 20 what I found, but that's a lot. It's a lot for one place. So with that, there have been a lot of reports of dark images in the shadows, spooky sounds, and things moving in the night, because why wouldn't they?
And is that 20 unnatural deaths?
I don't know that I found anything that was like a natural death,
Yeah. Yeah, because over 100 years, you could see some deaths.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah,
sure.
You're probably not going to see a lot of murders.
It's a lot.
Weird.
It's a lot for one location. Deaths. Yeah. So here's a story from memoriesproject.com that says, for those interested in the possible supernatural influence at the Cecil, I'm sharing my father's terrifying experience. My father lived at the Cecil in 1965. He was a young single immigrant from Northern Ireland who needed affordable accommodations near his workplace. He had been staying at the Cecil for some time with no unusual incidents to report until one night. He woke up to the sensation that someone was smothering him. He described it as a heavy pressure weighing down on his chest and throat, as if someone was sitting atop him. He gasped for breath and tried to fight back, but it felt like his entire body was paralyzed by an invisible but strong presence. Then, as soon as it began, the feeling dissipated. My father ran downstairs to the night clerk and explained what had happened. The clerk said, nonchalantly, that someone had been murdered in my dad's room. My dad changed rooms and did not experience anything unusual during the rest of his stay, but the experience haunted my father for the rest of his life. That's creepy. And it sounds a lot like sleep paralysis, but I wasn't there. I don't know. And I have had sleep paralysis. I've been in the throes of that scariness, and it feels incredibly real. I mean, I still, in this very moment, would say all of that stuff was real that I felt. I don't know if I was in like that in between, but whether you are or you aren't, to go talk to the night clerk and he's like, oh, no worries, man. Someone died in there.
Here's a new key. Go.
Yeah.
Go to room 315.
No, it'll be fine. It's not okay.
That's an interesting stat to find out. Like how many rooms, like which rooms have had murders? Like, is it the same side of the building? Is it a lot on the same, like three floors?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, we'll get to that. We will get to that. A couple of other overnight guests have said that they awoke in the night when they heard a rustling sound like a plastic bag being moved around and then felt weight on their chest. Very similar to this guy's dad when he talked about waking up in the night with that pressure. So Ghost Adventures did a special episode at and about the Cecil Hotel. So I was curious to see what they found. I do not watch this show at all, and it's not because I dislike it. It's just not my jam. I don't watch a lot of ghost hunting shows, except for the Ghost Brothers, of course. You know this. Yeah, like,
I've seen you watch.
Yeah, there are a few, but I don't think I ever got into Ghost Adventures. And again, not because it's a bad show. I just never got into it. But I did end up watching this one because I just wanted to know what they found. And the reason I watched it, aside from wanting to know what they found, is because given the history of the Cecil Hotel with the crazy murders and the suicides, I thought I was going to find a lot of stories, like people's personal accounts of what went down when they stayed there. And I found like close to nothing, which was crazy. The flip side of that is that there are people from like Ghost Adventures and like other like mediums who have said, oh, the energy is so bad. And when you walk in, you can feel it. And it feels very dark and very ominous. But where are all the stories? So I was so surprised. I mean, how many times did I tell you I was researching and I'm like, I can't find anything.
Yeah, you were rethinking the episode for a little while.
Right, because I'm like, what the heck? So the story, I think, is still so great to tell because it does have this really sad history. But then, you know, I'm like, where are the stories? If there's so much sadness and darkness, as people say, then I really thought I was going to find a lot of stuff. So fast forward, I did watch this episode of Ghost Adventures. It was an interesting episode. And also, you know, sad. If these spirits are in fact trapped there, it just hurts my heart. It makes me incredibly sad because they're stuck someplace where I'm sure they don't want to be. They're confused, maybe. I don't know if they keep reliving the incident that happened, whether it was suicide, whether it was murder, like whatever it was. So in the episode, they do find Pigeon Goldie Osgood's room. And I think she was like on the 7th floor, I believe. They did go to Richard Ramirez's room, which is 1419, I think is what I said earlier in the episode. They did go to Jack Unterweger's room. And they did go to Elisa Lam's room. They also went to the elevator that Elisa Lam was in the video that we saw. And all of it very interesting. And also just kind of surreal. And I can't even imagine what it's like to be there in person and see these spaces. But just to see them in the same elevator where Elisa was last seen, or to be in Richard Ramirez's room, or, you know, any space where these really sad or dark energies is residing right now, it's kind of crazy. So they did get some voice recordings of allegedly Pigeon Goldie Osgood. They got some of Richard Ramirez. And when I say voice recordings, I'm saying they're using a device where they are asking these questions audibly and they're getting something back through this piece of equipment. Right. So it's not right. And I don't remember what the equipment was called, but it's not like Richard Ramirez's actual voice. It's, you know, this like electronic voice responding through this piece of equipment. So is it him? Is it something else? Someone else? You know, I don't know. They made contact with Elisa, but it actually wasn't like Elisa. It was like someone speaking for Elisa. So was it Elisa? Was it someone pretending that she was in the presence? They did ask at one point if Elisa was present or was there, and the equipment came back and said present. Very interesting stuff. One of the things I thought was like super creepy is that before as they were setting up, I guess, and they didn't show this till, you know, in the episode when they're into things, into the investigation, but they brought two, and I say they, it's actually, who's the lead guy? I can never remember his name. He has the, Zach Bagans. I think that's his name. He has a museum in LA, or not LA, in Las Vegas that I really, really want to go to, the Haunted Museum. Mm-hmm. So he has some of Richard Ramirez's artwork, his actual artwork. It's framed, and he brought two of those pieces and had them in the closet of Richard Ramirez's room to help, I guess, build that connection. And I was like, you know what? You are asking. Yeah, that seems
like really, like, come on in, bro.
Honestly, what the heck? Yeah. So they had that, or he had that in there, and there was, you know, there was the touching, the scratching. I don't remember if he was in Richard Ramirez's room or if he was in Jack Unterweger's room, and he's asking questions, trying to get, you know, some communication, some feedback from them, and the water faucet turns on in the corner of the room. And this is not like a sensor type faucet. This is like you have to turn this like old-timey looking knob, so I don't feel like this is like easy to turn. So that was creepy. I was like, oh my gosh. But you know, I know a lot of skeptics would say somebody was off camera and turned it on, and that's incredibly possible, but it was creepy for sure. They saw shadows. The elevators like kept stopping on the 7th floor even when they were trying to go somewhere else, or they would like just run on their own, or I mean, it was crazy stuff. And when they did this investigation, the hotel was empty. Like no one was there. I think it's like the first and only time they've allowed someone to come in and do something like this. So I don't even know how long Zach Bagans and his team tried doing this and working with the hotel to get this done. I know a lot of people have wanted to do stuff like this. I did see a couple of YouTube videos, like just pieces where other, like, you know, just investigators had gone in, and I don't mean a team, it was like somebody and their friends, and they went in with their cameras to go check things out. And so yeah, it was I mean, if you're into it, it's worth watching. I don't think it's a horrible episode at all. It was interesting for sure. But to kind of see it all come together, where I read all this stuff for what felt like weeks. I just like read and researched and researched, and then to watch it where they're like walking through these spaces was really, really interesting. So I don't know. What's your take on all of this and the site and the...
Maybe demolish the building. Or hire somebody to come in and sage every inch of it.
That is a lot of sage. It is like, it's going to be, you need the fire department standing by, because it's going to be just smoke.
Yeah.
Total smoke. Yeah, I don't know. Like,
are there plans to demolish this building anytime soon?
No.
Remodel?
So it closed, I believe, in 2017 for a remodel. And then the pandemic hit. So it was closed for a while. It was reopened in the summer of 21 after all the delays. And now it is affordable housing.
Long-term housing or?
Mm-hmm. Long-term affordable housing. So I believe it like just not too long ago went up for sale again. So the actual hotel is not for sale. It's something, oh gosh, I wish I could remember. I'll have to look it up and I'll put it in the show notes if you guys want me to. But it's not an actual like, oh, I'm coming in to own the hotel now for as long as I want. It's like a 99-year
lease
something. Like, I don't remember exactly how it was worded, but I was like, what the heck? I've never heard of that kind of sale. So I don't know. I would love to hear your thoughts. Share like in the comments, I mean, wherever, because it's really interesting. I think given all the history that I didn't find a lot of personal accounts was interesting to me. I really thought it was going to be like, I was going to be able to read for the rest of my life, just reading about, oh my God, I woke up in the night and I saw someone standing at the foot of my bed, or I felt, you know, pressure on my throat, or, you know.
Another interesting question would be, did the architecture firm that designed it design any other questionable facilities?
Or is it the hoteliers? Because they had built other successful hotels, and that's why they thought this was like a no-brainer. It was going to make a lot of money and be super popular, and it was for a time.
Well, the construction team. I mean, you never know.
You never know. It's just, it's a crazy thing, because I think about like the energy, and I'm like, I know when things started to decline, the country as a whole was like in a difficult position. Oh, yeah. This is a depression. Like, everyone is suffering. Things are not good across the board. The area around the hotel goes from, you know, being upscale, or it's up and coming, and it's a lot of business travel and, you know, high society, and then it's crimes. Yeah, it's criminals and transients and people who are like down on their luck and just trying to, you know, turn things around. So there is a lot of that energy. There's sadness and desperation and all of these things. And is that what everyone is feeling? And is that what keeps these things happening? You know, or is it, did these things initially start happening because there was like a comfort? Did it feel like a comfortable place, like home, where you're like, oh my gosh, in spite or despite of the way I'm feeling, my sadness, my whatever, like I can be here and I feel safe, and I'm going to make the decision to move into the next plane, or I don't know. Like,
so brought many, in a lot of sadness, and
right, so many questions. Emanated
all that sadness to other people that were susceptible to that energy.
Right. So. Right, because I think that's a really great point, because there are a lot of people who are extra sensitive. I think everyone is, but some people are more sensitive or maybe more receptive to their sensitivity, so they can feel these things, where other people are like, I didn't feel a damn thing. I don't know. It's really interesting. I did find a YouTube channel, and I will link it in the show notes. I need to remember to do that. But this guy has like, I mean, I think his entire channel and following is about the Cecil Hotel, or that's at least how he got started. And he was renting an apartment like across the street from the hotel and could see into the windows. And there's like a video where he's like, he talked about seeing someone like in one of the windows, like a man smoking a cigar. And he did not know that at the time the hotel was shut down. It was like in 2020 or something. So there was no way for
I'm not pushing my luck.
No.
I'm not going to stay across the street from it. You may not even be able to convince me to visit it if we go to LA.
Yes. I don't know that I would want to visit it. I mean, it's I don't know. There are a lot of places I want to visit just to check them out. I don't know if the Cecil Hotel is one. And, you know, again, there aren't a lot of stories that I was able to find, but even still, there is that energy there. And I do believe, though, that you can change the energy of a place.
With a ton of sage.
A ton of sage, yeah. But I heard this interesting story, and it was about, like, there's a show, I guess, called Psychic Detectives, and it is detectives who work with medium psychics, and they go to these locations and, you know, they do whatever they do. And these mediums, I guess, are really spot on. Their information is typically accurate. And they went to this convent,
nunnery.
Nunnery. So they went to this convent to like do an investigation, and the medium they were working with wasn't able to pick up what had happened. So apparently, like, years ago, one of the nuns had been murdered. Like, she was, you know, up on this hillside, I think it was, in prayer and whatever, and she was attacked, and, you know, it was a pretty brutal murder. And so they had taken the medium out there and they, you know, she walked around and she's, you know, she's not picking anything up. So the interesting part of the story is this. The nuns said that every day they go to that spot, that area, and they pray. And they just bring in this energy and they pray for her and, you know, for all these beautiful things. And so over time, I think what's happened is they have ushered in this new beautiful energy. So I think often there is like a, what is it? It's not a vibration on a place. It's like a memory, like a, I can't think of the right wording, but it's almost like you engrave something. You're like, I leave this behind. And so it like settles into a place. It like, it's in the walls. It's in the, and so this happens when there is a murder, when someone has died unexpectedly or whatever, and it can cause confusion for the person who has crossed over or is trying to cross over. And often I think that like memory is left.
Yeah.
But you can come in and you can change that. So it doesn't have to stay as something that's negative, you know, which I know negative is subjective or in the eye of the beholder, but you know where I'm going with that. So I think about that for the Cecil too, where I'm like, is it this sad energy? Did Richard Ramirez actually perform any rituals there? Did
people in the 20s perform any rituals there?
Right. I mean, where did this come from? Where did it come from? Was it all the sadness that like culminated together and just became this like evil? Or is all the energy there evil? I highly doubt that. I doubt it. I don't know. A lot of questions. And I've said this in other episodes, like maybe when we get to the other side, we'll find out. Although I doubt it because I don't feel like anyone's like, oh, she should know.
Yeah, no, nobody's telling you.
No one's telling me. So I don't know. I don't understand what's happened. I know, you know, they changed the name in 2011. So it's not the Cecil Hotel anymore. It's the Stay on Main. And I think that was done to like help try to like.
So people don't remember?
Like a rebranding.
Yeah.
Yeah. And the ghosts are like, oh, I don't think so. Yeah, I don't know. I wonder what could have been. Like, had these things not happened, had, you know, I mean, I'd say not the depression not
happened.
Yeah,
it's like if the depression didn't happen, that changes a lot in the world.
Yeah. Yeah. Our entire history changes. But what would have happened, you know? Or I really don't know. So yeah, share your thoughts. Tell us what you think. Do you have any stories that we didn't cover about the Cecil Hotel? Anything you think would be relevant? Like we definitely want to know. I know I do. I just, more than like feeling afraid or scared in any way about the Cecil, it really just makes me feel so sad because so many lives lost.
I mean, I'm a little afraid of the Cecil.
Oh, yeah, sure. No, I don't want to sleep there.
No.
No.
I feel like that girl did go to a different dimension. She may have come back to this dimension in the water tank.
Oh.
Did they see any fingerprints on the lid or anything at all?
I don't know.
I was like,
I don't know. But you know what's interesting is that when...
I'm not a true believer, but...
When Ghost Adventures was there doing their investigation, they did bring in two psychics they work with quite a bit, I guess. And they separated them. One of them was up on the rooftop. And then one was in, I believe, Goldie's room. And the one on the gentleman on the rooftop did say something about he could see like a symbol or something on one of the tanks. And initially, I guess he couldn't make it out. And then he said, oh, it's a pentagram. And I was like, oh, God. But, you know, I think I would automatically jump to Richard Ramirez. Yeah. And was he, you know, did he paint a huge pentagram on the water tank? I mean, it could have been anyone. It could have been anyone.
It could have been just the week before they got there. Somebody could have painted a pentagram.
Right. I mean, it wasn't visible.
Yeah.
It wasn't visible. Yeah, okay. So I think either someone had painted something like that on one of the water tanks, or he is just getting, oh, the impression. That's like an impression in a place. That's the word I couldn't think of. Or that's what he's getting is the impression of like some things that had gone down on the rooftop or whatever. But the other thing he picked up was that was a body or a girl in a tank. And he was feeling like it was not at her hand. It was someone else who did this as a cover up. They were trying to get rid of her and hide her. And they put her in the water tank. So, you know, do with that what you will.
Yeah, because I feel like being in a water tank that long, DNA evidence kind of erodes.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know. The whole thing, super sad. So, yeah, that is our episode on the Cecil Hotel. Again, just share your thoughts, share your stories, share your questions, all your things. And tell us what other stories you want us to cover, what other sites you want us to cover, what other topics you want us to cover, because, you know, I'm here for you. I am here for you. If you enjoyed this episode, please follow for more and share it with the ones you like and love, because sharing is caring. Make sure you send us your questions on Instagram, Facebook, or via email at hello@themediamatters.com. Head over to our site, themediamatters.com, to join our free mailing list, and be sure to subscribe to our YouTube channel. With that, I hope you sleep very well, my friend. See you next time.